Gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late? Got a big day, gotta get home before the sun comes up. Up and away, got a big day, sorry can't stay. I gotta run, run, yeah. Gotta get home, pick up the phone, gotta let the people know I'm gonna be late. Yeah, babies, what's happening? Charlie Podcast time again. How are you doing? Welcome back to another fantastic episode. It's Kenneth Allen saying, how do you do? Love you. Thanks for listening up. Back from Europe. Yeah, I know. I get a chance to do that. Oh, I can't believe it. It's so crazy how fun it is to do that and get out of there and get out of your own skin for a while and then find yourself in another place and go, oh, okay, well, why am I here? What am I doing here? What do I love here? And I found some amazing things traveling by myself, all alone, but meeting people along the way and really enjoying the fact of being alone and also meeting new people and just kind of immersing, absorbing, and doing things in those places that you wouldn't normally do. You wouldn't beat feet and walk 7 miles to museums and walk all through places in one day go out of your way to go meet somebody and sit down and have a cappuccino with them and just talk to them. And I love that. I found that I just love doing that. I love novelty. And it's always a tricky thing because how do you love novelty and yet set up routine in your life? Because that's really what a lot of life is coming home and setting up your routines for yourself or your rituals or whatever you have. A lot of people, it's going to be easier or harder, depending on how you look at it, because you have kids, you have a house, you have to make payments, you have all of these things. You know, I don't have those things. I don't have a house. I have a BMW 325 coupe, you know, black on black, 5-speed, naturally aspirated, inline 6, no big deal. But what I'm saying is, that's all I have to my name, and all I have to do is throw a car cover over that bad girl and go on a little trip. And when I come back, she's already in burn for me. But it's great. And while I'm over there, I have a lot of come-to-God moments and think about, what am I supposed to be doing when I get back? And I'm looking for the thing, you know, and always striving for it and trying to find out, what is the next step? What's the next move? And while I was over there, I started writing down some ideas and beliefs that I have that I've entitled for this episode, 5 EMT Mindset Strategies, 5 things that you have to keep in mind as you're working as an EMT or nurse or doctor or paramedic, firefighter, truckman, whatever you are, and no PA, whatever. And maybe it'll help you through your day. Maybe it'll help. It does hurt. Does certainly help me. And again, I just want to preface this. I'm not a motivational speaker. I didn't go to school and get my degree in psychology. I'm not a self-help guru. I don't do those things. But by trial and error, I've come to some, not beliefs, but strategies that I'm going to continue to try and continue to try and hone and refine and see how that helps me along my path, along the journey. If this helps you, I'm really happy that it does. If you have disagreements with it, talk to me, write me something, say what you think is great. Tell me what you think is, royal BS. Along those lines, I just want to say, again, thank you all of you who have been writing to me and leaving little messages. I got a couple more today that I wanted to express. One's from Ed Reyes, who says, love the voice impersonations. Sweet show. Families are awesome. That was in regards to the one I did with my brother, Ryan Allen, called He Ain't Heavy, He's Ryan Allen, which is awesome. Go back and listen to that one. It was great. It was so much fun doing one with your bro. And then another one from Joseph Alcala, Ken Allen, exclamation point. Awesome podcast, exclamation point. Traumedy is the way to go, exclamation point. Bam. That's the way to go, Joe. Got to get tough. Go, Joe. G.I. Joseph Akala. You're a real American hero. Okay? Thank you very much for writing in. There's other ones here. Let's see. Pertain to other stories there I did with Amy Monahan. I hope I did, Amy. Let's see here. Go listen to the Amy Monahan one. That was fun. That was crazy to talk to a patient that I had had who is doing great because of a little work from the crews of 18 and 35 in San Jose. They crushed. Thanks again, guys and girls, for writing in. I love it. And I will, again, if you write something to me, I'll put it on the podcast, just so you know. And for a big thanks. Tell your friends, tell your family. Find us on traumatypodcast.com. Find us on traumatypodcast.com at iTunes. And find us on traumatypodcast at Stitcher Radio. Say something. I'll say it back. I love you. You're the best. Crush it. And I hope you're doing good out there in your jobs. And I hope it means something that I'm doing this for you. And it definitely means something for me. And it means something for the public at large that you're doing the job that you're doing. So keep that up, bros. Keep that up, sis. It's the best. So here was the debate that I went through writing this stuff down. It's been a while since I've done this. It's because I've almost had, like, I just didn't know how to bring this up. And as I'm reading these strategies, some of it is very literal, some of it's very abstract, and beyond that point it seems like some of them conflict, or that there's a duality to them. And the more that I read over this and started one and stopped and thought, what the hell is, why isn't this flowing, I realized it's because there's a duality to the strategies that I wrote down. There's a duality to the way that I see the world, and I think there's just a duality to myself. And I dare say, maybe with you too, that you want your cake and you want to eat it too. You want that freedom to have both things. Or for me, I need, or I look for that core thing. And I say, okay, well then what is my belief on this? What is my stance on this? And I'll make a stance and I'll say, this is it. Okay, so this is how I feel. And then something in the back of my mind says, well, then what about that? How do you explain that? And it's just this crazy thing that is it a nagging thing that makes me, you know, is it that I don't want to be 100% on something? That I don't want to be proven wrong? It's not that. What I've come to realize is that I have a few core ideals that I want in my life. Number one is to absolutely be in the moment. And number two is, when I'm there, to be able to analyze all that I know and analyze all that I'm sensing in that moment to make the right decision, to make the best educated decision in that moment. Further than that, I want to be able to act with compassion and with love rather than with fear and everything that goes with fear. Because I think, and I'm not the one that said this, I heard this from someone else, that really all there is love and fear. And you're only acting with hatred and jealousy and bias because that's a form of fear. That's a spiraling out of the limbic brain of fear. Whereas when it comes from love, that's 99% of the time the right move. That's the one that you have to make that decision on. And so, getting a little bit off topic there, but those are my pillars. And by looking at the stuff that I've written down here, I found that there is an essential duality to them that I want to share with you now and see if you understand what I mean. Because I found that with a duality, with a way of looking at things in both perspectives at the time they're occurring, in the moment that they're occurring, it allows you to make a case-by-case decision I've been thinking about like the king that sits, you know, at court, and he has to listen to both farmers talk about how one of them is plowing and making grain and wheat for the kingdom, and the other one has a flock of sheep. And so one of them is, by cutting down the wheat, the sheep are starving off. And how do you judge on that? It's something that doesn't fall under the laws. It doesn't fall under protocol. It doesn't fall under an algorithm. It's a case-by-case situation that needs to be resolved or tried in one way and see how that works. And if that doesn't work, you have to try something else. Now, I'm not saying I'm a king. What I'm saying is that I'm the king of me, of myself. And so in order to think clearly on these things, boy, am I extrapolating. But think about it. In order to truly make the correct decisions or the most visceral of decisions, you have to be able to weigh both things at the same time. You have to actually be in the moment and then also be drawing on things from the past. And that's that kind of, and I thought, wow, maybe I'm really yin and yang, man, yin and yang. I'm really in that. I don't know. Who the fuck knows? You could tell me yes or no. I doubt it because, you know, I'm still a flailing Buddhist or a prodigal Catholic, so I don't know. But nevertheless, pushing bravely forward, here are the five mindsets of an EMT. There was a time when we could dance until a quarter to ten. We never thought it would end then. We never thought it would end. We used to carry on and drink and do the rock and roll. We never thought we'd get older. We never thought we'd grow cold. But now, gotta get up, gotta get out, gotta get home before the morning comes. What if I'm late, gotta be... Number one. And this falls right back into my duality of nature. Have two people to speak with. Have two friends. Two heartfelt friends. I think we do this mostly, most innately anyway. You have your husband or you have your wife, and then you have your best friend. You have to have two different people, especially in this emergency field where I can maybe go home and speak to a girlfriend, or if I had a wife, but some things about that job, maybe I can't really talk about. And I can do that with my friend. There are some things that I can talk about day and night with my friends, but other things that would be better to speak with your wife or your husband about, you know, or your girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever it happens to be. You should have two people. You know, and here's the other thing. I mean, at some point, you're going to be at odds with one of them. You got to be able to go talk to the other one. By the way, this doesn't mean you love one person more than the other. Not at all. It means that you care enough to complain about that one person to the other one. And that you're trying to make things right, if you're trying to make things right, you know. Ideally, there should be two touchstones for you. And you got to ride it out as long as you can and keep that kind of mindset and keep those two friends with you. And at least two, yeah, maybe three or four, who cares? But you got to have that kind of understanding that there may not just be that one person you can go and speak with. So number one, have two people you can speak with. I like that number one is actually dealing with two. So keep that in mind. It's okay to have two. You don't need to have somebody deal with all of your shit, you know? And you shouldn't have to deal with only one person's shit. You, by the way, there's nothing better than caring about other people. And the more people you can fit in there and realize and be less selfish, the less you have time to deal with your, or to, not deal, but to sweat your own thing. So in here, at every point, remember that this could be pushed out to care more about other people than yourself. But I take that as read from you as EMTs and caregivers in general, because that's a lot of why you got into the job in the first place. So I'm not saying that so much to you. I'm saying it to the other people listening. Give back. It really pays back in exponential dividends, for sure. Number two. Stay busy at work. And stay busy at play. For sure. I don't mean getting cluttered at work. I don't mean staying so busy that you're not absorbing the calls you're going on. You're not present for the calls you're going on. I mean, go to a busy system. Go to a station where you're going to be running a lot of calls. Go to a hospital where you're going to be inundated by tons of calls. It's going to be overwhelming. Well, I got a little secret that I think everybody out there who's really doing this job knows. You need to have a period of time where you're overwhelmed. You need to see a lot of calls that you're not ready to have that are crazy, that you need to build an index, a Rolodex from. You need to be put in that situation where you're overwhelmed and your nervous system is taxed, and you need to see how you react and act in that call. Because that is just the nature of the beast. You will be overwhelmed. You will be frustrated by your actions or your inactions. The beauty of being in a fast and in a busy system is that you don't have that much time to sit there and dwell on what you did wrong. You got to get into something like that. For me, a busy system is the answer to it, because it's trial by fire. And within about, you know, they always say it takes about 2 years in a frequent system for a paramedic to become a decent paramedic. It takes about 1 year in a busy system for you to really feel like, okay, I can handle this. No matter what comes after me, no matter what I'm handling, I will handle the call. I may not be able to handle it afterwards. And that's where that friendship, number one, comes into play, where you can go and speak to number one or number two friend and talk about, hey, man, this is really sticking with me. What do I do? You know, or just, God damn it, what the hell? And they go, hey, you know what, you just got to shake it off. You did a good job there. Honestly, that was good. Or, yeah, maybe you should go talk to somebody else. Or maybe, you know, whatever they have to say, you fall back on that. A busy system allows you enough experience, but doesn't give you the time to stagnate in a bit, because you're going to be going on another call. And what that breeds, or what that bred in me, was learning everything I could from that call, taking it, internalizing it, and going on to the next call with a confidence, because you will run across a similar call sooner than later. That is going to show you, I learned from that previous call. I did better this time. I'm showing progress. That is a key to a busy system. The other thing to a busy system that I found that's great is that the people that work those busy systems are usually a lot more laid back. They're able to go with the flow more. They've dealt with all of these things in the past. And when you're working with them as a team, they show you how to make really intelligent, quick, split-second decisions on things. And being with that kind of crew and that kind of team really exponentially increases your learning curve. And also, they're the kind of people you want to hang out with. They're the ones that you want to have as a boyfriend or girlfriend. You know, they're the ones that you want to have around you, because they go, hey, you know what, man, I had that call too. I had something similar to that, except it was a woman, and it was bad, and this is what we did, and then guess what, 2 months later, same damn thing. But you know, we were able to think about that last call, and I was able to like make a better decision there. And it just gives you a better overall understanding of this field. It's going to be periods of time where you get smoked on a call and you just sit there and you can't sleep at night. Hey, get used to it. It happens. But when you have people around you in that system like that, that you can speak with, things don't seem as big. You don't need to make them as big, because they've all dealt with it, and you can either sit there and say it's the worst thing in your life that you've ever dealt with, or you can see that everybody, almost everyone else, has dealt with two or three of those calls in the last 5 years. And it's nothing special in other than it's something that's teaching you how to become better. And it's a beautiful thing. And the guys and girls that I work with in those systems have always been touchstones and always been, more or less, somebody that you can talk to them about and they give you a better point of view on. So for more than one reason, you should work in a busy system. And the other thing is stay busy at play. Go home. Get that crap out of your head. Go find something to put your mind, your time, and your energy into. If it's music, do that. If it's kids, go home and coach the Little League games. Go out with the wife and spend some quality time with her at a restaurant. And just go out and dance and whatever. You know, go to a museum. Take that time, like I said before. Walk to the beach. There's something to that. There's something to almost to the fact of walking to the beach and not to the fact of making it or being at the beach. But it's the fact that you got out of your frustrated little cocoon and you flew over to the beach as a moth, at least, maybe a butterfly. You got there and you proved to yourself, I can make this better. I can go after what I still like, even though the day before the call was crappy and I don't want to be on that. You know, and I didn't want to be there and I didn't perform the way I wanted to. But today, I actually did something for me and I did something to keep myself healthy in mind and body. And I feel better. And it goes back into your brain. And you prove to yourself that you can make good decisions, even though maybe the ones before you thought were bad. You can still make positive decisions for yourself, proactive decisions to make yourself feel better. Clean your house. It's crazy, right? When you clean your house, how you actually feel cleaner in your head, you know? Like, oh, okay, well, I actually feel better now sitting in here. Working out. There's no other way to get around it. Working out. Physical exertion kicks your ass and for some reason makes your brain feel like it worked out too. It's weird. But it helps. Every time it helps. It helps. You come back sore and you come back happy. I don't get it. I don't know. Or at least you come back thinking you don't have to do it again. And there's a certain satisfaction in there. I used to say as a kid, after college, happiness and sadness are temporary. Satisfaction is undeniable. Satisfaction in a job done, job well done, you say I did that well. There's nobody that can say I didn't. I know I did. You know when you've exerted yourself adequately. And I think, you know, that comes with this idea. Work hard, but play hard too. And half the time playing for me means, you know, going to a museum, seeing something cool, playing music and really working out a song and working out different chord changes that are hard. And it takes effort for me to do this stuff, but it makes me satisfied in the end. And I feel better. I feel better because I worked hard at playing. You know, like a good game of softball, football, two-hand touch, whatever you're doing, dude. You feel better when you worked out and you just crushed it. You feel better. So stay busy at work. Stay busy and work hard at play. And you're going to feel better and you're going to be, at least you work off the cortisol, at least you're more centered when you go back in. Number three, always be striving for some kind of advancement or refinement of what you do already. I always feel like I'm a pretty good paramedic. I feel really good about it, and I'm proud of it. And the moment I started feeling proud about it, I said, don't feel like that. That's when things are going to start going wrong. No, that's not it. You know, don't do that. Oh God, that's when Icarus got his wax melted from the sun. And that's why he fell, because pride comes before the fall. That's truthful if it's hubris, okay? If it's arrogance, but not pride. Pride in your work or belief in satisfaction due to your work. That's something different. There's always more that you can do. There's something that you can refine at your job. You do it right, then maybe you can make that done faster for the patient. Maybe you can get more information and make your diagnosis faster and get the kind of treatment to that patient that they deserve. Once I started becoming good at being a paramedic, that's when I really felt like I could go back and teach the EMTs how to do these things. And I didn't go in there saying, I'm the leader on this and this is how it goes. But when they ask questions about how do you know this and that, usually what I do to them, and it's, I think this is the key to it, is when they say, well, what if you show up and this patient's walking around, but this one's unconscious, but then the other one starts saying they have back and neck numbness and weakness. Who do you treat first? And usually what I say to them is, all right, make your own decision here. It's not about me making these day-to-day decisions. There is no right and wrong here. You could boil this down and it doesn't turn into black and white. It turns into grayer and grayer static grain. The key is teaching concepts and mindsets to them. And I only felt that way the more that I ran calls and the more I realized that it really, you know, you can teach the basics, but when it comes down to the in-between situations, the key is to teach them things, to teach them a type of mindset to be in. My point is this. I only started feeling comfortable being an EMT teacher after I had become a decent medic. And from that point on, I've always been refining and rehearsing my lectures to give to the students. I've been looking into taking other tests, becoming a different type of paramedic, or getting my prereqs to go to physician's assistant or medical school or nurse practitioner school, because I feel like every little bit is going to help. Even along those ways, every time you train with your crew, you're getting a little bit more. You aren't you? You are. But nobody wants to do it because it takes time out of your day and you don't want to do, oh man, you know, we're going to be running 8-10 calls anyway. Why the hell would I want to go do training too on top of this? But every time you do it, don't you learn a little bit more? And every time you volunteer for something and you stand up and do something, don't you learn a little bit more? Every time you face that fear in your gut, don't you learn a little bit more, at least about yourself? To me, as much as I don't want to at times, I push against that every time. I try and push against it every time. And I think I do it a lot because I feel like that's what you need to do. And my idea here is, you need to always be pushing to advance your knowledge and refine what you do already. Because you can become a teacher. You can become a captain. You can become a paramedic captain, a rescue captain. You can become a doctor that trains interns. You can become a nurse practitioner that treats nurse, that helps other nurses. You can just become a seasoned nurse that you see all over the place that are amazing. Or the old salty medic that can just nail it every time. You become that person. And if you accept that and you start teaching those things to people, not as a superior, but as a helper of other caregivers, you're giving back, not just to the people that you're training, but eventually to the public at large. And that is some amazing, amazing type of care. And a beautiful way to treat your profession. I never say that I know something for sure. The more I get into these situations, the more I find that I have to fine-tune more and more and more. It's like the more I start to tear the machine apart, I start realizing that I have to deal with carburation and fuel mixture and cams, and there's so much more to the machine that I've never really realized, that now I have to become an expert at that. And then I have to teach that to somebody else. I have to, or it, say, this is what I think about this. What do you think about this? And you're constantly getting more information back. You're getting questions that challenge you, which is why, you know, people say we don't want sharpshooters, which is like when there's a class you're teaching and there's a student that's always trying to throw that one question at you that people think, oh, he's trying to trip you up and show that you don't know what you're talking about. Well, that may be the case if you don't know what you're talking about, but you should actually want that sharpshooter, because if they're actually asking something that's valid, you better, you know, I better be able to think of the right answer. And if I don't, that's okay, because I can look it up. Megan Corey, who is my paramedic teacher and my EMT teacher back in 96, one of the greatest moments of admiration I had for her was that she'd say, oh, that's a great question. I don't know. Okay, at break, remind me, I got to look that up. I don't know. Damn, that's a great question. And you thought, oh, okay, great. And she'd come back in with the answer. She'd come back in with two or three different things to think about. And we would discuss it openly as a class. And that's it. That's how it works. Nobody is an expert. There are people that are pretty much experts, but nobody has all the answers, because it's an always shifting deal. But what you have to teach people is the mindset, is the philosophy, is the behind caregiving, where you teach them to think on their own rather than to just try and find the answers, because there really aren't any definite answers. Right back to what I've been doing with this podcast. You have to be able to think about these things in two different ways. You have to weigh, and you have to think in the moment, and you have to also draw upon what you've already been taught and what you've learned hands-on. Number four, finally. Remember, people see you as a symbol. They see you as the fireman, the nurse, the police officer, the one that, you know, brings compassion, the one that stands for truth, justice in society. You are very much a symbol to them. You're the one that's going to show up and save their grandfather at 2 a.m. You're the one that they hope, when nothing else that they can think of is going to work, when all else fails, they pick up the phone, and in a moment of panic or fear or hope, they call 911 and just wait for you to show up. They hope you are there to save the problem, to fix it. You know, it could be, like I said, that, or it could be a flooding bathroom, you know, 4 a.m. It happens. It happens all the time. That's our job. We're the ones that the community is based off. We're some kind of infrastructure, the hands that come out and they pick the people up. You know, if you looked at societies, the capital would be the government. The arms, the hands themselves, and the fire department, the police department, the hospitals. That's us. We're the ones that pick people up out of there and we save them. We put them in a place safe and we use our hands to do CPR and start IVs and care for people. That's our job. And people don't really see us. They see the uniform and they see the engine show up and they identify with that. The other thing that they identify with is we're the man. We're the ones that show up, arrest their cousins. We're the ones that show up and give them a ration of shit because we're tired. And we treated their grandfather like he was faking. And they have a negative opinion about us because of the way that the previous episode went with them. It's all dependent on us. The first one is based on what they've been taught their entire childhood upbringing. We're the ones that they call when things go wrong. The second part is when they actually called, or when their friends or family or neighbors called, and how we acted. One of those is a positive one. One of them could also be positive, but based on how things went in the past and how they've had run-ins and brush-ins, brush-ups with the law and us has become a negative thing. That's going to change the way that they talk and handle us and deal with us. What you have to remember, or what I try and remember every time that those things are going on, is I'm a part of that because I decided to take that job and swear that oath. But I am not that person that treated that patient the way that caused them to not like me. They see us as a uniform. We show up and we're not individuals. We're not. We're a uniform. So don't take it personally. You cannot do it. In a lot of ways, we're just the parents for society. They call us because they're breaking down. And we're just really there. We're not going to make that big of a difference. Sometimes we're just going to scoop them up and take them to the hospital. And I don't mean in the literal sense. I mean the panic attacks, the leg injury, the family that's fighting and the mother, you know, just can't take it anymore and falls to the ground, that stuff. But what we can control is our professionalism on scene, my professionalism on scene. It is a day-to-day battle in a lot of cases to walk this line. Here's the line I walk. And this is an interesting thing. Okay, I think it is. The homeless people in my first due, I see 7 or 8 times a month, at least 7 or 8 times a month. I know them by first and last name. I know their medical history. I know their past. I know the last time we picked them up, what was wrong with them. I know if they fixed that or not. At some point, I have to provide a level of professionalism to them, okay? And I have to do a level of caregiving to these patients. I'm looked at as a firefighter, as a caregiver. But really, when it comes down to it, I see these patients more than I see my friends every month. More than I see my friends. Now, don't I have an obligation towards them to occasionally, if they're sober enough or they're in the right mindset, to talk with them and say, what are you doing? What else can we do for you? This is the 5th time I've seen you this month. What am I supposed to do? What do you want me to do? What can solve this? What can help you? And you do that enough, and you do that enough. And then it gets to this point where you just become ambivalent. Right? There's that tendency to want to just go, hey, you know what? Screw this guy. Every damn time I'm dealing with this, what am I supposed to do? Well, I'll tell you what you do. Number one, you don't take it personally because they don't see you as you. You're part of the job. You're a uniform. And usually they're too stoned or drunk or everything to know who you are. So you walk this line between being the uniform and on the off chance that they're sober enough to look and listen, you tell them the truth and you say it compassionately. Really, that's the job. And so what it comes down to is this. Remember that you're a symbol of caregiver. You're there to help the people out when they want help. And you're there to provide the kind of professional care that you can provide. And that delves into when they can listen, you have a heart-to-heart with them. And when they don't, and they can't, and they won't listen, then you still act as a pro. And you all know how hard that is to do every single day when you're running 10 calls a day and you're going on that person maybe 3 times a day. You know how hard that is. But really, it comes down to this. They say this, okay. Being a professional, what does that mean? What does that mean? What does character mean? What does professionalism mean? People say doing the right thing when no one's looking. Okay. Well, yeah, that's the key. That's the key. You are doing things the right way when no one's looking, but they're including something that has nothing to do with it in the first place. People looking. Who cares if people are looking? You're doing it because I'm doing it because I swore an oath to do it. And I'm doing all of these things, all of these mindsets, because these are the right things for me to do. And these are the hard challenges I have in my life. And these are the things that I've chosen to achieve and hone and to become an expert in. I don't care what anybody else thinks. I'm doing this in full knowledge of what I need to do best. And that's why I do this job. Because I want to be the best at this stuff. Bottom line, I want to be the best at this. I don't need anybody else at this point. Now, I will listen to other people, but I don't need anybody else to tell me how to do this the best that I can. My character knows already. There's already the internal voice that tells me, nope, you know you got to put a 12 lead on this guy. I know it's 4 in the morning and he's homeless, and this is the fourth time you've been called for chest pain and he's had it for a week. You know it's the right thing. Do it. Just do it, because at that point it becomes the meditation. You know, did you guys ever see that? Was it Yiro Dreams of Sushi? Or just Yiro Dreams of Sushi? Where the guy is just the ultimate sushi chef, and he's making the best sushi in the world. He massages the octopus for 45 minutes straight and then stops because he's already warmed it by the tactile movements. He's softened it enough, but he doesn't want to make it mushy, so he has the perfect amount of minutes to massage it, to build the sushi for the people. He gives them the right amount to the people, dependent on their size. That kind of mindset, your personal professionalism, is what this comes down to. And that's what I've been trying to find out and follow all the time. Yeah, in that sense, it doesn't matter if anyone's watching or not. I'm going to do the best that I can do, regardless of how tired I am, how frustrated, no matter what else is going on in my life, no matter how the crowd or the family or the patient is treating me, I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to absolutely provide stellar patient care. Not for them, ironically, for myself, to prove that I can do it. Because if you got it, then use it.
Welcome to supplement.